You guys have probably heard me say this before, but when starting up an app or a business, the people you have around you, your team, is quite possibly the defining factor between whether you succeed or not. Today we speak to someone who spent 14 years at Google before founding 5People, which trust me, you're gonna wanna hear all about. Introducing Jenny Collins. Hey guys, and welcome back to the App Startup Show. We've got an amazing guest for you guys today. You guys are going to learn so much. It's from someone who's actually in the same business club as I am as well. And I'm really, really excited because, like I said, you guys are going to learn a lot. And like I said before, every episode, please make sure you got a pen and paper ready because I want you to take notes. I want you to really, really learn from this podcast episode because there's no point in you guys just listening and not taking any action from it because as I was just saying to our guest before coming onto the show, it's always more effective to take action in your business, whether you're starting an app or whether you're starting any business. I know this is the App Startup Show, but we also have entrepreneurs listening who are looking to start any business. So guys, please make sure you are taking notes unless you are driving. So guys, I'd love to introduce you to Jenny, who is our guest on today's podcast. Jenny Collins, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much, Aman. Thanks for having me. It's great to be able to talk to someone when you're sitting in the office all by yourself. So yeah, great to see you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on today's podcast. We really appreciate it. Like I said, like our guests are going to learn, like our audience are going to learn so much. So I'm really, really excited to see what value we can give them today. So Jenny, as with everyone that comes on the podcast, for anyone that doesn't know who you are, just tell us a bit about yourself and your background.
Great. So I've been a staffer and a staffing manager in tech for about almost two decades. I created my own startup recruitment agency when I first came to London. That was within retail logistics. That was a baptism of fire. I also had worked agency sides, Michael Page Monster, etc. Most recently, I've embedded myself in-house with Silicon Valley Tech. So Electronic Arts, EA Games, and most recently Google, where I was for 14 years. So I set up graduate recruiting. I moved into more senior tech, focused on specialists within PhDs, and then ran the research recruiting throughout EMEA, culminating in opening another 7 offices right from Amsterdam down to Accra. But I love finding the most specialist people in the world. And so really just finding those people and being able to set up teams and making them work from scratch was a real challenge and something I loved doing. So once I had moved on from Google, which was a hard thing to do, but I'd been there a long time, I wanted to do it myself. I wanted to be able to help a lot of different other companies that were really wanting to change the world, a lot of them coming out of big tech companies. Google was quite conventional and corporate and probably grew up faster than I did. I really wanted to help these entrepreneurs who are leaving Google and setting up new companies. So people who still had that energy and wanted to do things differently. So coming out of Google, people are called Zooglers. And we were already meeting up with them, you know, monthly in person. I'd always loved the energy that they had and the passion they put into their roles and always loved exploring what was possible, et cetera, with them. So once I left, I was still meeting up with them and they were wanting to connect with investment companies. And these investors didn't know how to get hold of these Zooglers. So I love being a connector and someone that makes things happen. So I started doing some demo days, which had happened previously in person, but because of the lockdown, they'd really slowed down to a grinding halt. I took them virtual and really thought we'd do a little bit of dabbling at the start and maybe have 6 companies and 20 investors and see where things went from there. The first time we had, 33 companies apply. We brought it down to 16 that we showcased. And we had 330 investment companies interested. Not all of them showed up, but all of them wanted to see the brochure afterwards, and all of them got some sort of investment and meetings following that virtual sync. So I've done four of those now because they keep coming and there's so much happening. It's really ended up spawning a lot of connections and businesses. I find my feet really through helping these companies then to set themselves up. So I've set up Five People, which is the company I'm running now, which focuses on these businesses once they get their investment. So once they've got their seed money, then I'll help them connect with who they need to be finding, which recruiters they need to be using. I can't do it all for them, but I love to help point people in the right direction. And at the first stages, I do a lot of that pro bono. Once they're going on to sort of Series A and they're getting their first few millions, they need to then work out how to convert that financial capital into people capital. And that's not always easy when they've spent so much money trying to raise funds. What do you do with it? How do you not squander it? How do you take a step back and work out what great looks like, what competitors have been doing, what you want to do differently, whether you want to outsource machine learning, whether you want to outsource recruiting, whether you want to grow only in one country or Europe or globally, what's your, you know, your markets that you're hitting, et cetera. So a lot of that just strategy from the start is extremely key. And so I do a lot of that at the start and I charge a management fee for that. I try to keep it as low as possible because I know that these companies are really trying to focus on building. But I try to build up a relationship where I'll be working with them going forward as long as they're growing. I don't want to just be doing the recruitment, but quite often I'll find some of their key people, something like their CTO or their VP of AI, mostly on the technical side. I also helped find for them to find recruiters because I want them to be able to sit on their own and be able to do this themselves. And sometimes, as I say, they'll be outsourcing recruitment. Sometimes they'll want to hire their chief people officer right at the start. But we work out what's right. And hopefully that relationship will continue. We've got quite a few clients that have been brought to me, not just by the Zooglers growing themselves, but by venture capital companies that really want these companies to succeed. So I'm just part of that puzzle. They really want to be able to give the funds to companies that will grow, but they also want to show them how to grow. And they'll usually direct them to people like me that can set them up and help them to bring the right people into their business. So yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. It's amazing. A lot of work, a lot of fun. But yes, yeah, great.
Amazing, amazing story. So let me ask you a question then. Where did this kind of like, because you came from this kind of background in EA, then you were in Google for a very long time, where did this kind of passion come from to help these entrepreneurs and these businesses that can change the world? Where did that kind of passion stem from?
Yes, well, I had recruited in sales and marketing back at Michael Page. It wasn't until I came to EA Games that I really got involved in development and hiring software engineers. And I love working with software engineers. My brothers are both computer scientists. My father was a computer scientist. He was also an entrepreneur that set up his own business. So all of a sudden I felt at home and I felt like I could be, whilst I'm not an engineer, I'm a humanities student, I can make that connection. And I love finding out what people really want to do and what their specialist skill is. So the more specialist someone is, the more I'm interested and the better I can connect. And then connecting them to something that can help them to further their career. I just really enjoy doing that. So that bit, I feel like I really flourished as soon as I was set in the middle of, you know, development houses, whether at EA Games, we were making Harry Potter games and Need for Speed and Battlefield, et cetera. You know, that was great fun. Then at Google, it was really quite technical. They were coming up with new ideas to work on Android, whether it was then moving on to health tech, et cetera. There's always something new, something inspiring. And I think there's something about building a better world and something that makes the world more efficient that will always be interesting. And there's always something new that will pique interest.
Amazing. So I'm really intrigued, like before we go on to Five, I'm really intrigued about your background in Google in particular. Massive company, it's achieved monumental growth in our lifetimes, and it's incredible what they have done and the level that they've got to. So for someone that's actually worked within Google, I mean, I can say from an entrepreneur like outside of Google, And I look at Google for inspiration. I look at how they're looking at the market, the trends, et cetera, and what they're doing, how they present themselves, how they present new products. So I look at them for inspiration, but coming from someone who's been within Google, what would you say are kind of your biggest learning points or takeaways?
I suppose scale and how to scale a company. That has been absolutely key. When I first went in, there was one floor in London. And I'll never forget my interview. There was a Dalmatian dog came running towards me, and I was on the fifth floor of a London building, and that was quite unusual. There was always something strange and unnerving and interesting and fun that was happening in the offices. There was always an openness and a transparency, so everybody could see what was happening. If you weren't working, everybody knew. If you were working really hard, everybody knew. You could see it. It meant that people that were being hired, that were hired at an exceptionally high level, were able to showcase the incredible work that they were doing. And that's what sort of kept people there. There was always something new to be able to be done. I think in terms of at the start and how it changed, I think there's always going to be changes throughout companies as they grow. And I think you could do anything. You were always given enough rope to hang yourself if you had a new idea, and you could go off and do it. And as things got bigger, you know, that can't always happen. People need to stay in lane because it's so much larger and there's a lot more organization. And Google's done an exceptional job at being able to do that as it's grown, as it's become a bigger company, while still maintaining this culture of fun and that people should be, you know, should trust each other. And I suppose then when I work with Zooglers, we still have that sort of trust. We know that people will do what they set out to do. They're not going to disappear. They're always going to be, you know, to be contactable. That sort of level of trust is something that's has been wonderful and certainly carried us through. But certainly, you know, in terms of growing, it's been an ideal sort of growing and learning arena for me to be able to sort of cut my teeth and see how to grow teams and to be able to do extraordinary things. And coming back to that point of scale, you know, just being able to 10x things, thinking at scale right from the start, whether you're a startup or whether you're in a company like Google, that's always got to be the case. If you just start and think, well, I'll mosey along and see how things go, that's just going to carry you, you know, in the wrong direction. You really need to start off with intent and to be able to work out how to grow your business and where it needs to be headed. If you have an idea of where you want to go and you tell people, you are so much more likely to get there. And that runs through everything in life, not just through startups or through big business. And then making those connections and communicating throughout a business, that's absolutely key. If you tell people what you want to be able to achieve, when that opportunity comes up, they'll think of you and they'll involve you, and that will help you to grow in your career.
Amazing. Incredible advice. In fact, that's a really good one, actually. I always tell people when they're starting a business, I don't necessarily say think 10x, but although I'm going to start saying that to them now, but when I advise other businesses, I'm always saying, okay, what's your vision here? What's your long-term goal? And they say, well, it's just a statement. What's the point? And I said, well, the point is that when you communicate that vision, whether it's to your staff or whether it's to people who you're going to work with or partnerships or whatever it is, or your clients as well, people like to be a part of something which is bigger than them, and they're therefore more likely to help you create it. And that's kind of the power in thinking 10x ahead and thinking of this grand vision, because people want to be part of that. They want to be part of something bigger, and therefore they are more likely to help you achieve it, which I think is super, super interesting. That's incredible. Google seems like it taught you so much as well, and what an experience that must have been. So now I want to take all of this now and all of this learning in your background and talk now about five people, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs listening, a lot of them will be thinking about their ideas and sometimes the grand vision as well. And they'll think about the idea and the grand vision, but a lot of them don't really think about the team and the people that they need. And it's so, so important. So first of all, let's talk about five people. So five people, first of all, is it five people or is it just five?
It's five as in five. Five is one of my favorite numbers. I have five people in my family. I like to get a high five if things are done well. I want to get five stars. I charge in 5K at a time. It's more about people and five. At some stage, it might be five people, but I don't want it to limit it. I don't want to limit it just five. It will be all about the number, but it's not five specific people.
Fantastic. So we're now at five. And so just to be absolutely clear then, so does five connect entrepreneurs and business owners and stuff with getting investment and then building the team? Or is more like, okay, you've got investment now, and now we'll help you build the team?
Yeah, so I've got a few prongs that I'm working on at the moment. I'm part of a syndicate that is pulling together investment for companies, because we saw that a lot of investment houses were coming in and focusing on taking the best talent and investing in them. And we thought, well, actually, we can do this. We also know a lot of investors or people that want to invest, or just people that have some extra equity that are sitting in Google or have left Google that want to help out these startups. So what we've done is pull together a lot of people that want to invest by providing free training for angel investing. So we have a lawyer who is based in the States who basically runs an hour-long course just to get people started, to say, like, if you're going to be angel investing, it needs to be spread betting. If it's early stage, you can't tell a specific winner, but you can really focus on getting some really great deal flow. Then, because we're doing these virtual demo days, we have that deal flow. We've got companies coming through that have exceptional ideas, and people can pick and choose which ones they want to invest in and create their own portfolio. So within that training, I think we got hundreds of people through it. So we were really surprised how many people wanted to get involved in investing. So these companies are being invested in. So that's basically creating companies that are growing. I'm then in touch with them. And so five people is a part of my portfolio career, where I'm then using my recruiting skills to help them to grow and to, I suppose, take back that money and reinvest it back into these startups. Another area that I'm focusing on is creating communities. So I've built a Zoogler to Zoogler skill sharing database so that they can help themselves as well. It's not just me finding CTOs, it's also about them getting advice and help from each other. So a lot of it is about community. And the way that I make money through this is by five people and staffing. But really, the passion comes from making sure that companies can get off the ground first and foremost, and then I make money from them when they're getting the larger investments. I hope that makes sense, but it's a real ecosystem.
It's a bit more, because the reason why I asked that question, because it's not really black and white, and especially when it comes to startups as well. There are so many different facets that you basically have to help them with in order to help them be successful. It's not just a case of, I'll build your team and then that's it. There are so many other things involved, because business is literally a roller coaster. There is so much involved, and there's so much that you'll be able to, that essentially, in order for you to provide the best possible service that you can do, you're going to have to kind of go towards different kind of services and intertwine them almost, which is why I love Five so much. And I think it's such a great initiative that you've basically done, and I think it's super helpful. So I want to ask you some questions about the companies that do get investments. What would you say are the common traits that you've seen in companies that are getting investment and the ones that don't?
Okay, so I would say, investment companies all have their own thesis. So they will have certain types of companies that they're investing in. At the moment, probably 90% of them will say they're working on, or they want to look at businesses that are making the world a better place, whether that's, climate or health tech. They're mostly the ones that I'm working with are in tech as well, just because that's the sort of people that I will draw in. Oftentimes companies will want businesses that are responding to the world that has changed over the last few years. Venture capital lost quite a bit of money when the world changed and they weren't expecting it. And they now need to redress that and reinvest the money into these new areas. Everyone seems to have become a first adopter. Everybody's suddenly using new technologies and has been forced, I suppose, to use a lot more technology that they perhaps wouldn't have before, just to connect with people and stay alert and to be able to even just buy things and bring groceries into their store. There's so much tech that's coming up. And I think there's a lot of investment companies are looking for what's next, what's going to make the world a more efficient place, and also making sure that they have the climate in mind, sustainability in mind, etc. So those are the areas that seem to be really prevalent. Also, there's a lot of companies that do the sort of middle ground, that work on infrastructure, that work on cloud, that work on different types of technologies, even cryptocurrencies, etc. There's so many new things that perhaps you wouldn't be interested in if you're, you know, if you didn't know about them, but they need to be there to be able to support the whole economy, the logistics, etc. And all of these things are, I suppose, invested in when there's great people who have new and innovative ideas or better ways of doing things or more efficient ways of doing things. So I think in answer to your question, the investors are really looking for people that have done something similar before and want to do it better. Mm-hmm. People that have a track record. So it's always good to have people that have done it before or that have created an exit. People that are bringing the ideas together and able to communicate them. That's exceptionally important. You can have the best idea and not be able to communicate it. But people that have a plan and a strategy for where they want to get to. So it's not just about, hey, I want to do this over the next 6 months. It's really that strategy in the next three to five years time and where they want to get to and how they're going to get there. You need to have that sort of trajectory started, kickstarted, and you need to have, you know, a viable product out into the market as soon as possible and tested. So yeah, it's really a case of getting things out there and iterating rather than planning and then getting the money and then making it. That won't work, not these days. You've really got to get it out and running, a proof of concept into the market, and as soon as it starts taking off, that's when you're going to have the investors talking to you. But more than that, it does need to be, if you've got a plan to go big, you need to be talking to investors early doors. Even companies that are investing at Series A, they're already talking to pre-seed companies. They're working out if these are good people. They're working out whether they can build a relationship with them, whether they'll listen, whether they're, you know, the sort of companies they want to be investing in. And that relationship starts very, very early. So yeah, communication, I think, is the biggest thing. Making sure you know where you're going, you can talk about it, and you're connecting with the right people.
Hey guys, just want to quickly interrupt this episode to give you a quick story. So when I started out on my app years ago, the biggest issue that I had was that I didn't know where to start. I didn't have this podcast, I didn't have any friends that knew about apps, and I didn't have a network that could help me out. I had Google, thankfully I'm not that old, but there was just so much information everywhere with so many conflicting opinions that made it all quite daunting and confusing to me. I wish I just had something that I could use to tell me, okay, you've got an app idea, start here. Do this first, then after you've done this, do that, then after you've done that, do this. Things in a step-by-step process that I could follow and end up in a place where my app is on the right path. A few years down the line here at Didgeroo, we've created just that. A step-by-step process that anyone can use to get started on their app without any experience. And from what we can see, it's the first of its kind. Our first ever course. After a beta test and a whole bunch of testing, we believe we finally nailed it. From our exact 10-step process to getting started on an app that we use in our agency today still, to how to get downloads for your app, how to find a winning app idea, and how to validate an existing idea if you already have an idea to know if it's going to work, even how to get investment for your app, it's got you covered. There's over 8 hours of exclusive video tutorials along with a bunch of PDF resources included as well. It's got a bunch of 5-star reviews, and everyone that's used it has said it's like the best thing ever if you've got an app idea. So we're super excited to announce it's publicly available. Head on over to appstarterguide.com. That's appstarterguide.com, and you'll get redirected to the Udemy site where you can get the course. That's appstarterguide.com, and you can get it all there. Like I said, I wish I had this when I was starting out, so I'm super happy to announce it for you guys to get. Okay, back to the podcast.
That is an amazing answer, by the way, which I've never read anywhere from Google or YouTube. For anyone listening now, that's probably the biggest golden nugget you can take away so far from this episode. That is so incredibly helpful. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't know that. I mean, a lot of the entrepreneurs that I speak to are forever in that planning phase, or alternatively, are wanting to launch the perfect product. So a quick story. I mean, I was listening to an audiobook about how Airbnb got started and how Uber got started. And Uber's first version of the app was awful, broke, never worked, but it showed the potential. And yes, their whole thing was get it out, test it. It was miserably bad in terms of technology, but in terms, yes, of showing what they're looking to build, it actually made it real to investors and other people. And they said, okay, we've got something here. And there's a bit of traction. We can see it's not an amazing amount of traction, but we can see traction. And it was the same with Airbnb. Airbnb actually crashed. The website crashed in one of their investor meetings. But the point is that they had that mindset of just get it out there and test.
Just get it out there.
Get it out there,
yeah.
Which is amazing. And I'm so glad you said that. This is amazing.
And actually,
yeah.
Just to add in, it's Google has a phrase for this, which is fail fast. Yeah. You should try and fail fast because you won't learn anything unless you try it. So aim to fail fast, and it's okay to fail. You know, try to fail. Try and do stuff that will probably fail because you might get lucky. And that's when you're going to get lucky in a good way, because you're trying something in a way perhaps that somebody else hasn't. If you look at how many companies have been sunsetted, or what Google calls companies that are items or products that have been cancelled, just look that up on Google. There are so many of them. And that's okay, because you will learn from every mistake. You'll move on and you'll do it slightly better. Or you might take parts of it and move it on into something new. But that process of iteration is definitely important. So create something, improve it, or move on and take it into something else. But yes, iteration.
Wicked. Awesome. I love that. So I wanted to ask you now about building a team, because I personally feel that every startup founder or business owner or app founder that I speak to, they haven't thought about building a team, and neither have they ever built a team before. But being a business owner myself, I understand how important a team is. It's probably the single most important thing. So I'm curious, where does someone start when it comes to building a team? Apart from hiring you, where do they start?
Amazing. Well, there is no one answer. I wish there was. It would be really easy for me to convey that. And I think people would have written books about it. They've probably written books about it anyway. But from what I can see and from what I've read, teams tend to be better if they're diverse, if they have different ways of thinking, if they have people coming at things from different angles. Some of the best companies you'll have seen, whether it's Google or Apple or whatever, they always tend to have people that have perhaps argued and had that creative tension, because there's one way of doing things, there's another way of doing things, but let's talk about it, let's iterate, let's clash, let's build, let's make it fall apart, let's move it on. So that creative tension is extremely important. So if you're bringing people together, there's no rule in terms of what age you should be. If you look at how many startups globally have exited successfully, sometimes they're, this myth of people that being in their 20s and making billions, that happens very rarely. Also, there are startups that happen when people are in their 50s and they've got lots of experience. But quite often it happens when there are both, when there's young people coming together and then they bring in some expertise. Balancing things out, I think balance is extremely important. So you need creative, strategic, energetic people to be a CEO. You need people that are technical, that will say this is what's possible. You need people that are selling the dream and selling the movie. All of these people pulling in different directions, but they need to be able to communicate. They need to have a framework around which to move. So there needs to be that sort of North Star of where you're getting to, where things are moving to, and everyone can agree that they're moving in that direction, but how you get there can be debated, can be moved on. So when I've looked at building teams at Google and bringing people together to try and spark things off, sometimes it's four incredible people that are in their 20s that are all doing different things, and they can pull things together because they're all different. I mean, you know, they all bring different things to the table. Sometimes we've brought in a senior professor that everybody wants to work with, and that's been a magnet of people to bring together. Sometimes it's a team that's moved from one place to another, or two teams that are brought together. But so long as you have that key aim and everybody's agreed on where you want to get to, the more difference you can have, the stronger that team will be and the more successful they're likely to be. So pulling it together, if I'm going to a company, you need to see what's already there, where the gaps are, how they're being filled. A lot of people, particularly right at the start, will have one job title, but they're doing a whole lot of other stuff. Is that the best use of their time? Do they need to be given much more clarity in terms of what their outcomes need to be, and then filling in the gaps? Or do you need to bring in somebody completely different? Is there a team of young people and they need someone that's got more experience? A lot of these things need to be looked at, and there's no one answer for every team that's going to be able to be applied across the board. But that's what makes it interesting, you know, and that means that even if your team's doing something similar to another company, you could do it in a completely different way and supersede anything that they've done because you've applied your knowledge in a different way. But that's what makes it interesting. So it's really about filling the gaps and making sure that everything's in place to make sure that the company can get to where they need to be as soon as possible. But it comes back again to that, you know, have the way forward, have the culture correct, have the vision of where they need to be, and have everybody aligned.
Amazing. So here's a question, which is an interesting one. Again, I speak to a lot of and advise a lot of startups. And one common trait I find right at the beginning, and I'd love to see how you get around this when you speak to founders, is a lot of them are afraid to let go. They're afraid to let go of certain responsibilities or tasks. And if they do let go, they have to monitor that certain thing which they have let go, whether it's client communication, whether it's just their mailbox, for example, whatever it is. So how challenging have you found it in training and coaching entrepreneurs to let go of certain tasks and tell them that you really should let somebody else do this?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few things I can draw on. First of all, at Google, there's the ideal example where Larry and Sergey stood aside and let Eric Schmidt come on board when things grew faster than they could cope with, because they were, you know, PhD students when they started the company, and they didn't have that experience to be able to take it as fast as Google was growing. And then, of course, Eric passed it back to Larry, and, you know, it all worked out. If it's done well and maturely, then absolutely anything can be achieved. And I suppose if this conversation is approached with respect rather than approached with, hey, you can't do that, you know, you need to have somebody better, I think it's all in the words and how it's actually conveyed. Secondly, how I organize my family and how my husband works with me is that we have, you know, what we're worth. We've decided what we're worth. And if we can find someone that can do it more cheaply, whether it's cleaning the house, whether it's doing, you know, the engineering and sorting out BT Openreach for here today, you know, I can't do that. So either I need to buy an expertise that I don't have, or if it's something I can do, if someone can do that more effectively, then for Collins PLC in our family, then that's the right way to go forward. So if I can't let go of looking after my calendar when somebody else could do that far more cheaply per hour, then, you know, that doesn't make any business sense. So when you're talking to people in a startup, quite often you just need to talk about actual business sense, what, you know, what the rationale is behind them not wanting to let go of things and how things can be done. So if somebody won't let go of their calendar, if they want to be a calendar person, they can't also be a CEO. It should be a logical discussion without any sort of emotion in it. And so long as it's kept that way and kept professional, I think it always makes sense to be able to delegate and make things more efficient as you grow and create a role for yourself that you want to be able to do.
Amazing. Okay, that's a really good answer. I love that answer, actually. We've had some really good answers here. So for anyone that is taking notes, you're going to be learning a lot. And I'm so glad you're listening to this episode because it's incredible. Even I'm learning. In fact, I'm taking loads of notes, as you can see here. So, Jenny, question. Let's say, so we have a lot of entrepreneurs listening now, a lot of app founders, potential app founders, etc., who have a business idea or an app idea. Now, they're just sitting there with this app idea and they're not really sure where to start. Do I build a team first? Do I build up content first? Do I get some feelers out there? How would you recommend, based on all of your experience and founding companies yourself, how would you recommend somebody would get started on their idea if they were sitting there with an app idea right now?
Or yeah, business idea? So there's a couple of ways of going about it. Some people say, I want to be working for myself. I want to be a startup. And I don't know what the idea is. I just want to do it. You need to have the idea, but it doesn't need to be the perfect idea. You need to plan to fail the first time. Just get out there and do it, because you'll need to know how to build your website, how to, you know, pull things together, how to get, you know, an accountant sorted out, etc. Pull all this together And you'll work out by then whether it is something you want to continue doing. And if it's not, you can pivot. But get started. Just get started. And that works with any project as well. Getting it done is better than, you know, waiting to make it perfect. Secondly, if you have an idea and you think this could be great, there's a great book called The Mom Test, M-O-M, by Rob Fitzpatrick. And that really suggests, you know, you should ask people and do due diligence on, you know, whether users are going to be interested in this product. But don't just ask your mum. Or how do you ask your mum? It could be in the questions you ask your mum. Because your mum's always going to say, oh, yeah, it's awesome. Or your friends are going to say, oh, yeah, I'd use that. But actually, would they? So you really got to approach it properly to make sure that you're not investing your time in something that everybody is going to say yes to because you're you, but actually something that's going to be useful. And then thirdly, just build it, get it built, get a rough basis, see if people actually will use it, see if it's useful, see if it's doable, see if someone can do it. And of course, look at the competition, see whether people are already doing it. There's a few times I've seen companies set something up and then realize, oh gosh, lots of people are doing this. But don't let that stop you, because there's always room. You think you know the market, there's always nuance in the market. There are so many people, because in this society, we can actually reach long tail, we can go global so quickly. The more niche your idea is, the more you can charge a premium for it. And there's always going to be somebody interested in what you're doing. So if you can get the word out about what you're doing, you can communicate it, put your skills on the internet, put what you're actually wanting to be able to achieve, people will connect with you, whether it's LinkedIn, whether you're doing stuff on Upwork. Make some noise, find out if other people want to join you. And once you get started, you'll find you'll connect with people. There'll be people that will be interested in your idea. There'll be people that have done similar stuff, and keep talking to them. Don't just sit in your room and do it by yourself. Get out there and, you know, talk about it and make a noise.
Amazing. I love that. I really, really love that. Here's what's interesting. You know, I read, if anybody is listening right now and has Google in front of them, Google Reid Hoffman, I think it's MVP or something like that. But the co-founder of LinkedIn basically said, just going back to when you said just get started, he basically said, the co-founder of LinkedIn, that if you're not embarrassed by the first version of your product, you launched it too late, basically. And that's what he says. And in fact, the article is called, if there aren't any typos in this article, then I've published it too late. And it was just so interesting the way he talks about it, saying, just get started, just get it out. There's going to be mistakes, but who cares? Like, you can fix this stuff later, just get started, which I think it's really interesting that you've said that, because it's such a good article. And it just relates to, I mean, all the clues are there, right? With all the successful companies in the world, and they're openly and actively, and us on this podcast, we're all actively saying, just get started. It's better than not getting started and not doing anything whatsoever and just sitting there doing research and business planning for ages. So I 100% agree. And I think it's great advice.
Yes. And actually, there was a meeting we had recently with Patrick Pichet, who was the CFO at Google that took Google into Alphabet. Fantastic chap, always a great personality and such a wonderful person to have in the company. He actually said he's very involved in capital investing now. And he said, look, think about it. These days, even if you're 50, you're probably going to live to be 100. You know, people are living longer and longer. So don't plan to retire. Don't think, oh, I'll make a million, then I'll retire. What are you going to do with the rest of your life? Or if you think, hey, I'm an accountant. I've been sitting here just being an accountant. Now it's too late to change. Yes, it is. You can have another career, even if, you know, you're 50 or 60. You can, you know, build a company, do something completely different, do something exceptional, do something you've always dreamed about doing. Just do it. And then secondly, he said, these are the two main takeaways I had. At the moment, there's so much investment coming in, particularly for tech and coming in from the States. A lot of the investors really need to recoup the money they lost before. And there's a lot of investment coming across, more than anyone has seen in the last few years. So do it now. If you're going to do it ever, this isn't going to last forever. You know, there's always crests of waves. And, you know, if you're going to move forward, then make sure you go at the right time. Now is the right time. Do it now. Just get something out there, make it happen, because you won't get that opportunity again. So that was really motivating. I just thought, wow, if he's saying that and he understands global economies, yeah, and that's what he was putting forward. So definitely I would trust that.
That's incredible. Listen, this has been an incredible episode. I only have a few more questions for you, and I want to thank you for your time. What does the future hold now for Five?
Yeah. So a lot of what we're doing at the moment seems to be focusing on the syndicate and investing money in the right sort of companies. And that's bringing more and more companies to me. Also, then venture capital are hearing about me and saying, hey, can you help out with this and the other? I know I am now looking at which companies I can recommend, because I can't do all the recruitment myself. So I do want to know about companies that can help startups, whether it's creating engineering teams, you know, of 30 people at a time, or whether it's hiring executives that will specifically come in for companies moving from Series A to Series B. I want to be able to make those recommendations, and I want to build up those close relationships so I can advise more, because I can't do all the recruiting. So that's how I'll grow on the staffing side. I do have a couple of people that are joining me working on the bits that I'm not good at, so the bits I don't want to be doing, and I'm delegating and speaking of that earlier. It's exactly the focus that I have. I have various teams that I'm relying upon for expertise on the finance side, various teams that I work on within staffing, but I just love to be able to connect people, to communicate with people that could be doing similar stuff, but also then to bring on non-exec directs. I think that's my next big step within Five. A lot of companies can't afford to hire the senior executive that they need to give them the advice to take it to the next step, but they can hire somebody that will come in once a week, once a month, that has done it 6-7 times before. So building a pool of people that will give that sort of advice, I think that's going to really help to mentor and shape the future stars and startups that are coming through the pipeline at the moment. So yeah, that's my direction at the moment.
Incredible. This is awesome. And Jenny, then last two questions, which is there anything that I haven't asked you which you think would be valuable for our audience of entrepreneurs to know?
I think if you were to ask me why I didn't do this before, I think I was a little comfortable in what I was doing. But I haven't learned so much as I have in the last year by just being out there, by listening to people, by reaching out and asking for mentors. Mm-hmm. I started from scratch with that. I literally think, wow, this person on LinkedIn looks incredible. They're working with entrepreneurs. They've had a few exits. And I would literally reach out to them and say, hey, I'd love to talk to you about what you've been doing. And in the same way as I was hiring specialists in the past, if you have a common connection, build upon that. So when you're reaching out to people to be mentors, you don't need to know them. You can literally just reach out, and it's okay if people ignore you, and it's okay if people say no. But sometimes you'll find these really incredible individuals that will give you incredible advice, and furthermore will connect you to really relevant, great people. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing I'd advise for people that are listening. Reach out, ask for advice, ask for connections, and just keep networking.
Great. Well, that leads nicely onto my question, my final question, which I ask every guest on the show, so no pressure. And it could be just what you just said as well. But let's say you're in a situation where you had an entrepreneur in front of you who had an idea, a business idea or an app idea, whatever it is, and you could only give them one piece of advice. Now, it could be just what you just said, absolutely. But what would be your one piece of advice that you would give them?
I think it would be to test it out in the market, talk to people that you don't know. So reach out to people and say, is this something that you can see has legs? Is this something that could make the future a different place? If the answer to that, if anybody says yes, then ask them who they know, how they can get started, but just keep with the open questions, with the asking for help, and get it out there, make it happen, because now is the time. There's so much funding available if it's going to go well. There's so many people interested in startups. There are so many things that can be delivered because tech has become so easy to use, whether it's no code environments, apps that just help you to do stuff, being able to Google everything that you would have had to pay for in terms of, you know, lawyer templates or, you know, how to do accounting, etc. Everything's at your fingertips. Just ask for help, ask for guidance in terms of navigating all the information that's out there. But the same as what I said right at the top of this interview, have your own North Star, know where you're going, have a plan, and just start doing it. Just get going.
Amazing. What an incredible way to end the episode. Jenny, I want to thank you for coming on today's episode. I think our listeners are going to learn so much. I learned so much. Let's see, my notes have gone crazy here. So thank you so much. And we all really appreciate your time. How do people get in touch with you? And Five, is it LinkedIn, Instagram? What's the best way for people to get in touch with you in the company?
Yeah, you can just Google me, Jenny Collins, alongside Five People. You'll find me. That's the easiest way. I've got a website, which is fivepeople.org. But yes, just reach out. I will always look at every email. I get a lot of inbound messaging about new companies. Hey, I'm doing this. Hey, I'm doing that. I try to get back to everybody to say, hey, that's not my thing. Or here's somebody that could be more interesting. But I love to connect people. So if it's not me that can help, I'll push you in the right direction to hopefully get you started. But yes, happy to help in any way.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for appearing on today's show, Jenny, and all the best. And for anyone listening to the episode, we'll see you on the next one. Take care.
Thanks.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you find it useful. A quick reminder of my little story earlier on in the podcast. If you have an app idea, but just don't know where to start, head on over to appstarterguide.com, that's appstarterguide.com, where you'll be redirected to a Udemy link where you can get our awesome course that has helped thousands of people to get started on their app without any experience. It's literally got you covered from beginning to end, and I promise it'll make your life a whole bunch easier. That's appstarterguide.com. Until then, I'll see you in the next episode.